Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Dracena Wines Podcast. Before we get started, I'm going to ask to please scroll down and leave us a review. It really only takes a few seconds to click those 5 stars and to leave a short review to let us know how we're doing. It really helps us in the iTunes world and lets our name get out there to more people. In this episode of Wine Writers Wrap-Up, I sit down with my wine writing friends and discuss our thoughts on points and medals. How much do they affect people's decisions to buy a bottle of wine? We would love to hear your thoughts too. You can always leave a comment on our podcast homepage at dracenawines.podbean.com. Sláinte! So, hey, everybody. Welcome. How's everybody's Monday?
Good.
Yeah?
Very good. Yeah, good on this end.
Did we have a nice, Mother's Day weekend?
We did. Yeah. I worked.
You worked.
Now that I'm in a restaurant thing. Yeah. I had to work. Then I came home and I did my first Saber, so.
There you go.
I was proud of myself.
Anyway, so this month on Wine Writers Wrap-Up, we are talking points versus palate. And I expect it to be kind of an enthusiastic chat because, you know, it's not at all a bit controversial. Not at all. But our guests today, I'm going to go left to right. So, Debbie, you are first. Debbie Giaquinto, the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess, is a certified wine specialist and wine location specialist in Port and Champagne and has a background in travel, radio marketing, and community relations. She's also the author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, chairperson of the Hudson Valley Wine and Spirits Competition, and co-owner of Happy Bitch Wines. She's also my co-host on Wine for Bet Street, which is a free monthly wine education program. So, hey, Deb.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hey,
Deb. Hey.
And next is Jeff Kralik, is an award-winning wine writer and blogger based in Houston, Texas. His appreciation for wine started while studying in Strasbourg, France, and blossomed as a high school teacher when he would spend his summers as a bicycle guide tour in Europe. Jeff has visited, often by bike, most of the wine-growing regions of Europe and U.S., and according to him, I am a storyteller. While I take my writing seriously, I try not to take myself at all seriously. Howdy, Jeff.
Hi, guys.
Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
And my buddy Nick Broom is marketing and brand manager for 2 wineries in the Pacific Northwest. He began his career in wine down in Argentina, which I'm very jealous of, where he did marketing communications for a well-known Malbec producer. He holds his advanced certificate in wine and spirits from the Wine and Spirit Education Trust, and he is currently a WSET diploma student.
Hey, Nick.
We have Rick Dean, is a wedding photographer by day and a wine blogger by night. He focuses on food, wine, from the Charleston, South Carolina experiences. He enjoys learning about wine and sharing his perspective. So, howdy, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Yeah. Today's episode, points versus palate. And this is something that is really near and dear, I guess, to me as a wine producer, because, you know, we are curious as to what gets people to recognize a wine. You know, we send it out to wine enthusiasts, we get our ratings, which we love our ratings, they're great ratings, and we send, you know, we get people who buy our wine and write reviews, and we love the reviews, but what makes the difference, what makes somebody go out and say, hey, you know what, I haven't tasted that wine, but I want to buy that wine. So I thought this was a pretty good topic to go into. So just right off the bat, what's your thought of points? Let's start off with points. Oh, you know what? I didn't even talk about what we're drinking, but we'll go points and then we'll do what we're going to be drinking.
Okay. So, you know, I come at it from two sides. One is, you know, I work in marketing for two wineries, and so points are obviously very important. But I think in general, points guide people, and I think the general wine consumer wants to be led. I know that people have asked, you know, what's good? And I said, well, what do you like? Taste? And it's kind of a cop-out answer, most people think. And so I think those points kind of guide people. Either it helps validate their purchase, or, you know, for some, it's actually a status symbol. And so they just bought the, you know, the 100-point Wine Spectator. So depending on the wine consumer's lifestyle, it serves lots of different purposes.
Okay. And how about you in terms of points to you, Nick? What do you?
So I align myself with certain MWs, certain wine critics. And so based on, because I know that our palates are very similar. And so I, you know, I'll look at what they've rated highly and certainly I will at least try it. But it's not my go-to. You know, I'll always be adventurous and try something. But, you know, again, I don't just blindly go off of a point, but I try to align myself with people that I trust and whose palate kind of aligns with what I like.
All right. Jeff, you were going to jump in before?
Yeah, I would agree with most of what Nick said. I've gotten into heated arguments with a couple other wine writers about points. I use points on my site. I use a range of 3 points, but truth be told, it's I start with the point in the middle and then I add one on either side. And I don't know why it's such a big deal in the wine industry. There's certainly people who are really adamant that they'll never use points, that you can't put a point on to a wine. And I understand the argument in the abstract. When it comes down to it, we're always making decisions about good and bad. And so, like Nick said, it helps, it gives people a starting off point. I mean, I would argue that's, at least for me, that's what it's intended to do. It's a starting point. My father-in-law, who now lives within 200 feet of me, this is a happy face. he claims to be a wine drinker, and he drinks a lot of wine, but he knows absolutely nothing about it. But every single bottle that's in his shelf that I haven't given him, he'll know what the point score was.
Uh-huh.
He might not know how much it cost. He might not know, well, he definitely won't know who gave it the 90 points, but he'll say, oh, that's a 90-point wine. So that certainly drives his purchases. So whether we like it or not as writers, consumers use it.
And I would say being probably the least credentialed member of the panel as far as wine education goes, I come at it from a different point of view, but it's solely based on my experience. And I have had some really tough times buying wine based on points, but not having done any of the research beforehand because at the time, it didn't make any sense to me that I needed to know, well, what are the wines that this particular wine critic likes? And which will then guide me as to why they maybe have scored a wine the way that they did. And so I have no vested interest in points. I just find that they're not very useful to me. And for the average Joe and Jane that I communicate with through my blog and through my experiences with wine, the points tend to be confusing to them because they do not have the history and the background of what is Wine Spectator looking for? What is Wine Enthusiast looking for? What is Robert Parker looking for? And so showing that something is 96 points only means something if you know what the guidelines were that person was using to give it those points.
And I think Nick hit a lot on the spot. I mean, I think it's subjective. It's subjective to the person reviewing it. And like Nick said, that he aligns in his job up with people that have similar palettes to them. So I've gone into wine stores and, you know, oh, this is a 92, and I've, you know, points, whether it's Spectator or Enthusiast, and I've gone home and I opened it and I'm like, how on earth can that be, you know, whatever the points are, you know? So I think it's really subjective.
Well,
on,
well,
on
you know, person. Debbie, because they bought a full page ad in that magazine.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
You know, so I really think, you know, you have to know your, you know, the palette and the profiles that you like and align it with the wine. Do I think that the points matter to me? Not really, because I've liked an 88 or an 85 point wine over a 95 point wine. It's, you know, who's judging these? And I run a wine competition, so I see on the flip side, you know, how it's done, and I've judged so other wine competitions. So it's, you know, interesting to see, and I've watched other judges, you know, just take a sip and say, that's an 85.
Well, but I think it's also important that, I mean, we have to recognize that the points are a marketing tool.
They are.
But so, and so are competitions, and those are all good things, right?
Yes.
Marketing and competitions are good things. It tells Dresinia Wines that they're making what many people consider, because when you're entering a competition, there's more than just one person tasting the wine.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that this group of judges really likes your wine and values it and thinks that it is a beautiful Cabernet Franc expression from California. So
and I think that's important.
And I do, I also think that's important. But for me, I mean, the lesson I had to learn was just because it had points didn't mean I was going to like it. And so I have learned, and what I try to always teach people is to lean on the people that you're buying your wine from. Buy from a reputable wine store or from a reputable wine company, and lean on them for their experience, so that when you pick up a bottle of 95 point something, they can say, put it back, you're not going to like it.
Absolutely. It's the salesperson knowing your tasting profile, what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah.
I would agree with both of you. I think, you know, when you look technically, you might have a 100 point wine, but if you gave me a 100 point Pinotage, it's not going to make it into my glass, because I've just never met a Pinotage that I really love. And so it doesn't matter that it's technically a beautiful wine. And, you know, through W said, I could taste a wine and be like, it is, you know, really great quality. Doesn't mean I'm going to like it, but it would be, you know, a 100 point or a 95 point wine just on its merits. And unfortunately, it's just a hideous grape if we're talking about Pinotage.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with Pinotage, and I would throw a few others in there, like Chambersin. Oh my God. I would rather rip all my fingernails off than have another glass of Chambersin. But my question, and this is something I struggle with regularly, because I'm frequently talking about this stuff around people like you, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way at all. Although after I finish this Pinot Noir, not Pinotage, I might feel differently. But I realize there's a continuum between wine geeks like us, or maybe even there are more people to one side of that spectrum than us, and then my father-in-law at the other end of the spectrum. But where do most wine consumers fall? Are they more like my father-in-law, who say, you know what kind of wine do you like? Red. Versus, you know, versus what Nick just said, you know, if you give me a Pinotage, which I'm pretty sure my father-in-law would not be able to tell you what that meant, they couldn't care. I mean, so we like to have these kind of, I come from academia, and we have these, I was in a class once, we talked about the word the for two whole days, And only the people in the room, and most of the people in the room, cared, and most of them really didn't care at all. So if we talk about, you know, the differences between a 96 and a 94 or a 92, or as Debbie said, an 85, for the vast majority of the drinking public, do they care?
See, now that
price might fall into it too.
Sure.
Right. Now here's my question of those points going to a person who was just going into a wine shop, and you know, your father-in-law who doesn't know wine, just, I'm going to go in and I'm going to buy a bottle, and I'm going to bring a bottle that I'm hoping Jeff is going to like. So I'm going to look at a point, right? That's what I think is, those people go in and they look at points, and then what number is the, oh my God, I'm not even going to advertise that my wine got this number, you know, and what number is, yeah, I'm going to go promote all of this all over the place. Because I've seen wineries promote an 85, you know, and I mean, is that good? Is that bad? And then my other question is, well, the person who's giving that points, so just anybody in general, like Nick is saying, he's going to taste the Pinotage. He may know it's not technically bad, but could you give that a 100 because you don't particularly like that wine? So the person who's tasting it, they can't really be in love with every wine, you know? And I think that might impact what the score is for a wine. And is that right?
Well, I think you have to determine whether or not the person who is assigning the points is basing those points. It's my understanding that, you know, the Robert Parkers of the world are looking at that wine from, is it technically made the way a California Cabernet Sauvignon is classically made? Is this the epitome of the technical aspects of a Cabernet Sauvignon from California or from Napa or whatever? And that's different than whether or not he or she likes it.
Well, then how do you get a 98, a 96, a 94 if a wine is technically sound?
Right.
What makes the difference between a 98, a 96, or a 94 then? If that's all it's being on.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, Laura. I mean, I've seen it range at my previous winery, where we had a 96, a 92, and an 89. And I'm like, how does that work? And I've seen it at other wineries, not the ones that I currently work at, where, you know, across three or four different critics, it ranged, and it was a big range.
Right. And it's technically, it is the same exact wine. So technically sound, it's going to be identical for anybody who tastes it. And
well, you would think so, but think about it this way. I mean, technically, normally you send two samples. It could have had,
right,
say, an off day.
Could have. Or that person could have had an off day.
Or that person could have had an off day. So,
or that person, you know, could have ate something beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Or, according to one of my friends that I just met on a recent press trip, could have been a root day. Don't want to drink wine on a root day.
A root day. What's a root day?
A root day, ROOT, it's the biodynamics calendar. Certain days are better for tasting wines than others.
Oh, a biodynamic. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Boy, that throws a whole nother wrench into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, to me, it. So, and putting Robert Parker aside, because, well, maybe not. I talked to a lot of winemakers that say, well, they've changed their winemaking style because they know that they'll give them higher points.
Yep.
Laura, you said, you know, what's the point where you start advertising about it? I've talked to many winemakers that the difference between an 89 and a 90 is as big as you can get. Right?
Yep.
Because no one wants to be a B student. Everyone wants to be an A student, yep. Right? And, absolutely. And that's why, that was one of the brilliance, the brilliant thing, why I think Parker, if he indeed started, was the first to use that the scale, was brilliant because everybody can understand that, right?
Right.
I mean, there are other people who do different ways of rating wines that are more esoteric, that, you know, like five bells or five flowers or five stars or whatever. And, you know, that's a little bit more. But the 100-point scale, or really it's the 20-point scale if I want to get real technical about it, is really easy to understand, right? And even though you might not agree that said 88-point wine is worse than said 92-point wine, whoever made those two scores does think so. And so in that person's mind, that one's better. So you say, if they're the same price, I think it was Debbie that brought up the price. Price plays an enormous, I mean, if you only have $20 to spend on a wine and there's two on the shelf and one is a 90 and one is a 92, if you're the average consumer and you don't really going in for something specific, to me, it would be silly for you to buy the 90.1. It would be silly. Right, that's my own opinion. If those parameters are such that that's the situation. This same trip about the biodynamic, I was on a trip with a bunch of buyers to Italy. I was the only journalist, as far as I knew, and I went around with a couple of them, and points were it. That was the driving factor. I mean, sure, this is a great wine. What kind of scores do you have? And I was really shocked by that, because every other press trip I've been on, I've been with other journalists, and that never comes up. I mean, that would be a good article to write,
Jeff.
Yeah. But that's the quickest way to shut down a conversation on a writer trip, if you want to say, I got 96 from Robert Parker on this. Turn everybody off immediately.
I go back, so Saturday, I took my mom out for her Mother's Day dinner or whatever, and we went to a restaurant. I'm looking at this wine list, and there wasn't a single Cab Franc on it. So, of course, I go into, as Mike says, ABS, always be selling. So I went up after we were done, and I asked if was there a manager, was the wine buyer there, or somebody, and the manager, there was a man there and a woman. The woman was talking. The guy wanted nothing to do with listening to me. And so I explained who I was, what I did. And then he was like, well, do you have a card? And I gave him my business card, and he still wasn't too interested. And I said, well, we produce Cabernet Franc. We've gotten 91 plus ratings in Wine Enthusiast. He became my best friend. He started asking me questions about the wine. He was like, here's my business card. Send me an email, blah, blah, blah. So points do matter.
Points matter in that instance, yeah.
Points matter. No, I'm telling you, with the buying, especially on retail or the on-premise, or that makes it. I'm surprised at how much it does make a difference, but it's.
Yeah.
There are retail chains, one in particular, and I think they just changed their rules, that would not let you promote anything less than 90 points. Yeah. And on like your shelf talkers, and they said nope, you will only promote on a shelf talker 90 plus. So yeah, it happens.
I you know, while points don't have much an influence on what I buy, I think points absolutely have their place for winemakers and for retailers and for restaurants, because it's been a known process and a known way to essentially categorize the quality of wine for, you know, a few decades. So people need it. Where I find that it gets, now the grocery store owner or the Costco wine buyer is going to love points, because they can have a 96 point Rioja for $14.99 in their store, and people will buy it because it's 96 points and it's only $14.99. So while they need it, I also think that for the average Jane and Joe, it does them a little bit of a disservice, because they may not even know what a Rioja is. they only see the fact that it's a $15 bottle of wine that has 96 points.
And they're buying that $15 bottle of wine because it has 96
points. Exactly. Exactly. So Costco needs the points to help sell their wine. Will the person who bought it like it?
You don't know.
You have no idea. Well, and, if you're Jeff's father-in-law, it won't matter whether he likes it or not. It's got 96
points. 96 points. $14.99.
I think to your point, Rick, he might like it more because it has 96 points.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to take this as a break, and it is 8:30, and we haven't talked about what we are drinking yet. So I need to know what everybody is drinking. So I'll start off. Check out this label. Kind of cool label, right?
This is Britney Spears.
Oh, it does.
I left the bottle downstairs with my husband.
It does. This is a Funk Zone Rosé. It is a Santa Barbara County wine. 87% Grenache, 13%.
I'll be right back.
All right. 13% Syrah. And this is actually a wine by Wink.com, which is sponsoring.
Oh, I just heard an ad on by them on SiriusXM.
Oh, well, they are sponsoring this little live stream podcast. And if anybody is, it's actually a pretty awesome program. I don't know if you heard it on Sirius, but, you know, it's a wine club, not like other wine clubs, because you can not order whenever you don't want, but you get four bottles, put four bottles in your box, and include shipping to your door. And if you go to trywink.com, which is trywinc.com/wrap-up, they're going to give you $22 off of your first order. So you can get four bottles delivered to your door for like, I think it's like $25. But it's pretty cool. You do this little questionnaire, and they ask you these questions, you answer them, and they give you a palate profile, and then you can pick wines that that fit your profile, or you can say, no, I'm not going to do that, and I'm going to pick whatever wines I want. So again, trywink.com/wrap-up, $22 off. So,
and that's better than this. I literally just listened to the ad on SiriusXM. I literally right before I joined this podcast. And they're only offering $20 off.
Woo! Serious.
Whoa.
$2 extra, baby.
Washington. Bam. One Jefferson, I guess.
All right, Jeff, what are you drinking?
I just polished off Hank's Hewis. It's a Pinot Noir. It's a 2007 Peter's Vineyard. Sonoma Coast, I think. Yeah. So it was signed by my good friends Hank and Maggie. This is the last bottle. They sadly just retired, and so there'll be no more Skewis wines available. But it was absolutely fantastic. I've been a big fan of theirs for years. Really, really nice people. And then since that was gone, I moved on to Rodney Strong Reserve as like Cabernet. Rodney Strong, really great people. Really liked them a lot.
Debbie, what you got?
I've got a Chablis for Duane Millet Chablis.
Oh, Debbie, were you a French major?
No. How could you tell? I can barely speak English, let alone French or Italian.
I was a French major, so I always loved the butchering of the French language.
So
the French.
2015. Yeah. And I must have gotten this, I buy wines from Garista a lot. He's out in Seattle. I get a shipment twice a year, February and like October.
Oh, the Gargeriste.
Yeah, that person.
Yeah. It's another French word. I understand.
Merci buckets, Debbie. Merci buckets.
All right, Nick. I didn't see water, did I?
So, you know, life water currently. Because you are all on the middle or the East Coast. So I literally had to leave work early. I hope nobody at work is watching this so that I could be here by five. So by the time that I got in, got my computer set up. But I'll probably be having Hannah Chardonnay, Russian River Valley, with dinner, which is a pork tenderloin.
Oh. But it's important to note that he may not be drinking wine, but he's wearing Merlot.
There you go.
Right.
You know?
And so I was going to say the same thing, that when you skip out of work wearing a Merlot t-shirt, they're pretty sure you're going to be drinking. So
yeah,
pretty much. You know, I was going to say that I'm on the keto diet, but I'm definitely not on the keto diet.
Is that a French word, too? I don't know.
That's Debbie. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, Debbie, why do you say that? I am drinking... I am drinking Teutonic from Oregon Pinot Noir. It's from 2016. Oh, nice. It's really nice. I'm really enjoying it.
The bottle will be empty by the time the hour is over.
Wine stores. We did a Pinot Noir tasting, and where we were comparing Burgundy to the U.S., and so we were tasting Oregon, California, and a couple different appellations in Burgundy, and this was the representative from Oregon, and it showed really well.
I like that Rick is drinking a Pinot Noir from Oregon, and it's not mine.
Oh, well.
It's fine, Rick. Totally cool.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody selling your wine here, and I do try to buy local as much as I can. Oh, yeah, that worked, didn't it? Waboosh! Picnic and...
All right.
At the same time.
On that note, let's get back to points. All right, let's get back to points.
What's the point? At this point, what's the point?
I don't know. I don't know.
Can I make kind of a point back to what Rick was talking about earlier?
Yes.
And not drinking local. But, you know, there is a wine brand that uses points or scores as their biggest marketing tool. On every bottle, it says most awarded wine brand, and that's because they enter every like county or city fair and so forth. But Barefoot is the most awarded wine brand, and they use it. That's huge.
Yes.
That stuff sells
a lot.
It sells.
And I will tell you that. As a winery, the amount of mail I get to enter competitions Nick, right? It's you could enter like five competitions a day every day of the year. You know,
there's an entry fee, isn't there?
Of course.
Yes. But you know what? It's honestly, if you're a big winery like Barefoot, it's nothing. It's like I think the San Francisco Chronicle is $85. You know, so if you're
my wine competition's $35.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cash cow, right? Because people want ratings.
Yep. I'm not gonna lie. Double gold, that's well worth my $85.
Yeah, but for all those who didn't get double gold.
Well, we were silver last year. We were silver last year. You know, and it's, you know, we were proud of the silver because that's one of the reasons why we enter the San Francisco Chronicle is because everybody doesn't get a medal there. You know, it's
so everybody doesn't get a trophy.
That's right.
No, but then that's why there's the Kenosha, you know, wine and hash festival or, you know.
Well, so I was a judge last year at the Houston Livestock Rodeo and Livestock Show, which is one of the biggest, apparently, competitions in the country. And so I remember very distinctly that we tried 2 flights of 20 Pinot Noirs from $5 to $11. 40 of them. 40.
And
that's
how?
Not okay.
How many did you award medals to?
I didn't award any, but there was pressure from our little group.
Hmm.
The leader of the group said, "Well, we need to award at least a gold. Can you change your no metal to a silver? Can you change your silver to a gold?
Well, that's kind of a huge jump. Wait a second. Coming from somebody who runs a competition, if you're asking someone to do a no metal to a silver, that's a huge jump. I can see a bronze to a silver.
Right. So that's more accurate. That's a more accurate representation, Debbie. But when you taste 20, the pressure, it was not negligible, was you have to award something. Pick the best of these. And so of the two flights of 20 Pinot Noirs from $5 to $11, I probably awarded a gold. I can't remember. I could check my notes if I could ever find them. So when I go in, and this is not to diminish your double gold in any way, Lori, but I walk into a winery and I see all these medals around a wine. I think, what kind of pressure was there to give an award to somebody?
Right. You know, and well, what, and going back to what you were saying, what award are they actually getting? Are they getting a gold medal at the Wama Wama thing, you know, but with all of the competitions, there's levels of quality of competitions. And
sure, yeah. The Decanter Wine Awards, I would say, is the, you know, highest echelon of wine awards, you know, in my mind.
Right. And not everybody gets a medal there. And, you know.
But Jeff, I mean, if you're evaluating 40 $5 to $20 Pinot Noirs, I mean. Who was submitting $5 to $11 Pinot Noirs? With the wineries?
Barefoot.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the wineries. So, remember, I live in Texas, too. So, there's Texas wine industry is not insignificant.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's good, but there are a lot of producers of Texas wines. I've yet to find one that I say, that's better than Pinotage.
Oh, my God.
But was the wines that you taste all Texas wines, or was it in
Texas? We didn't know. We had no idea what they were. No idea. The only time that we could find out what we were tasting was if it won an award, and I noted it. So in our, we were the only group, there were a group of five or six of us that tasted we didn't just taste $5 to $11 dollar Pinot Noirs. We had really good Chardonnays too, so. I mean, you can't live on $5 to $11 Chardonnay alone, or Pinot Noir alone. But I noted which one won the double gold, and then I could go back to my notes once the results came out and say, oh, that was that wine. But I have no idea what the 38 other ones that didn't win an award were. I have no idea. Go ahead, Greg.
No, I was going to say, so the one that got double gold, was that a surprise to you?
So how did it get double gold? You bowed down and gave it a gold medal? I cannot envision the Jeff I know bowing down.
This was a year and a half ago, and I like to claim early onset. So I'm not entirely sure what happened. I mean, when you're tasting that many, I'll speak for me. I want to find a good one. You don't want to say that you're just sitting around wasting your time drinking a bunch of schlock. So I don't know if it was specifically with the 5 to 11 Pinot Noirs, but you say, you know, this is the best one of the flight. And you could go back and they would let you taste them again. And so the best one of the flight, to me, should win a gold medal, maybe, right? I mean, one has to finish above the others, right? That's what a competition is about.
But then that goes against judging, you know, or technically. Technically, thank you. Wow.
Just because I'm drinking water.
Yeah.
No, I would agree with you, Lori, but at the same time, kind of to Jeff's point is, you know, you have to base it on the category. You can't judge, you know, a $5 Pinot Noir against even a $15 Pinot Noir. So, you know, does it?
Well, that's true.
Or can you?
I mean, you could, I suppose. But, I mean, that's why there's these price categories. And so you do have to judge within, you know, right, that bracket.
Except and that double gold $5 Pinot, that double gold $5 Pinot is got the same metal that a double gold $35 Pinot right has.
And right, that's exactly what they're not doing. They're not saying this is a $5 bottle of Pinot Noir, and for $5 Pinot Noirs, this one gets the gold.
Right.
But you know what? If I'm a wine consumer, just a general wine consumer, and my budget is, you know, $5 to $11, or you know, that's what I'm gonna go for. You know, if I have a larger budget and I see a $15 Pinot Noir with, you know, a double gold and a $5, I would hope that a lot of people would say, okay, I'm gonna splurge a little bit more than $5.
But if they both have this, if they both have the same perceived value in their metal, if a double gold means double gold, and there is no distinction between the price of the $5 and the $15, the person is going to say, why do I need to spend that extra $10? I can get a double gold for $5.
It's kind
of
like,
but I gotta say, what differentiates the $5.99 bottle of wine that got the 90 points and the $15 bottle of wine that got the 90 points?
Well, so I was about to say,
I mean, are they not scored on the same merit? Like, you know,
the W set thing, right?
20 points.
No, I don't think. Go ahead,
Chuck. So for me, it was, they said, these are the wines, and you were to choose the winners from this category. And to Rick's point, I do believe when the scores came, or the results came out, it was, they had the categories. So it wasn't just, here are our double gold Pinot Noir winners. It was, here's our $5 to $11 Pinot Noir award winners. Here are our whatever the next jump was. I think it was 11 to 20, and then 20 to whatever. So, but having said that, I don't think they say, which was my approach, this is not as piss poor as the rest.
Right.
Well,
that was my judging criteria. Is like, I have to find a shiny piece of shit.
Diamond in the rough.
Right, that's a better way to put it. Yeah,
I like a shining piece of shit better.
Yes.
So,
well, that's the difference. Diamond in the rough, female, you know.
Exactly. You know, but when you go to a grocery store, I think most consumers, and again, this is just me, you know, thinking, you have a set budget, and so somebody who only has the budget for $5 to $10 might look for that gold medal. Somebody who can afford or wants to afford something larger is not going to go with that $5 Pinot. That's why, you know, when you're seeing them on the shelf, usually they're within some sort of like price brackets.
Yeah, you need to drop a little lower on the level of shelving to find the $5.99.
Absolutely. And so, you know, somebody who can't afford, you know, the ultra premium or premium wine, you know, category is not going to go shopping and doesn't care about that gold, double gold on the $5.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, we've walked in to wineries and, you know, like you said, Barefoot, or not that I've walked into Barefoot, but like wineries like Barefoot that have all of those metals, you know, they've got their bottle there with all of their metals and all of that stuff. And then you got to look through what those metals really are. You know, I think San Francisco Chronicle is a highly, you know, recognized competition and respected competition. And that's really the only competition that we submit to.
Again, I want to underscore, I didn't say that to demean or diminish.
No, I agree.
Otherwise impugn. But when I, it's kind of like we were talking about before, if someone says this is a 92, and I think it was Nick that brought it up, well, what does that mean?
Right.
Who are you? And do I align with what you say? And so, but when I see double gold, I say, well, congratulations. I hope that's helped you. But being who I am, I'd rather taste it and decide for myself if I think, you know, that I want to purchase it or I can recommend it or whatever.
Right. So with that, that's like perfect, because my next question is, ignoring the whole this is a specific point or this is a specific metal, is there anybody who you follow because they do, you've realized over the times of tasting wines that they actually do have a similar palate to you? Or is it vice versa, where there's somebody who, because Mike and again, I won't say names, Mike and I, we know that a person who rates wines, and if they say it's like a 95, we stay away from it because their palate is so off from what our palate is. So do you have people that you follow or pay attention to their wines because you're similar to their palate, or you know their palate is completely opposite?
Yes.
No. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I finished with my yes. That's good.
I've, you know, the people that I follow, sometimes we taste the same wine and we don't have the same experiences. And I'll be like, how on earth did you get that? And I'm like, I got totally different end of the spectrum, as did my husband. And we're sitting there looking and it's like, the guy is nuts. He's, you know, he's doing it because he likes the winery owner, or he's got a relationship with them, or whatever.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, Debbie, because that's difficult. I pointed out the skewest wine that I was drinking tonight, and they're really nice people. So when I evaluate their wine, it's not just what's in the bottle; it's the experiences that I've had with Hank and Maggie. I mean, it has to come into play. We can't live in a completely objective world, which. The W set, the whole scoring thing, I would like to talk about that later if we have time. Going back to it, there's a friend of mine, I would say a pretty good friend of mine, who another wine writer, who will not give anything below a 93. And I don't know why that is. I've never asked him or her about it. But it just seems like, and I don't know if this is where you were going with it, Debbie, but this person likes the attention of wineries sending him or her samples, of being invited on trips. And so if you, personally, I won't write about something if, let's just say for the sake of argument, it's below 86 or 85, 86, 85. I mean, there's too much good wine in the world to say, you know what, this is a mediocre wine. Mm-hmm. So, but this person doesn't publish anything that's under a 93.
Well, then I think that their credibility, and I maybe, Lori, this is a whole nother topic for this discussion, but that comes into a credibility issue.
So, Jeff, does that mean that this person, if that person rates it a 93, it's equivalent to somebody else's 85, or they're not writing about it?
The reason I point that out is I follow their casually their writing about it, but I often see the ratings on the winery websites, and okay. So is it to draw? Is it not only, which was my first perception, was to keep the golden goose alive, but also to drive more traffic to the website? Because, oh, let's go check out the website because it's right here. The ratings are on. I mean, you're more likely to put a 95 on your website than a 90. That's just,
right.
I mean, I understand that. Or obviously above an 88. So is this person inflating the scores for a reason other than honestly evaluating the wines? I mean, how many 95-point wines are there in the world?
Right.
I mean, by definition, there's, right, that's the top
5%. 5%.
So to me, then, do those ratings, do those points mean anything? I don't know. I mean, if I were to ask this person, I am sure I would get the response, oh, no, that's, I mean, I'm not going to challenge. I wouldn't challenge, it's him, his.
Or hers.
Or hers. It's him. I wouldn't challenge his reasons for doing it because, I mean, again, you know, the wine industry is full of cool people doing, I mean, they're making a beverage for your enjoyment. I mean, why be a jerk about stuff?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's, which is why I don't publish stuff that, you know, I published one bad review. It was actually pretty funny, but it was a bad review, but well, I surprisingly never received another sample from that one. Who shall go on name?
Well, I mean, I don't assign points to anything, and I don't feel like I have the credentials to really honestly assign points to anything. To me, it's whether I like it or I don't. But one of the wines that I recently tasted that came at the recommendation of one of the stores that I frequent quite a bit, I didn't like it all. I went back to the store and said to the person, tell me what it was about this wine that you liked, because I didn't get very much from it that I found pleasing. And we talked about it.
That was a great conversation.
I had a similar experience.
She said, well, what did you get? And I said, I got all minerality, all acid, and not a lick of fruit. And she said, exactly, that's what I love.
And wow. Was it a Columbard?
No. But it was, you know, but I'm like, okay. So I'll be able to put that wine on my blog and say, hey, I tried it. It wasn't for me. It didn't have the profile of a wine that I'm going to drink.
If you're looking to remove all the enamel from your teeth, this is the one for you.
This is the one for you. And I know people might like this wine, right? So, I don't know. I mean, which to me gets back to the whole point thing. The points have a different value to different players in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it is subjective. There is a... The community is large, but it's not huge, so you're part of a community.
No, Rick, I agree with everything you said. I would just say, kind of, because looking at the clock, I guess we're about to wrap it up, but to me, points are a jumping-off point. And so, you know, that it's kind of like, it's a long story I don't have to recount here, but somebody somewhere liked this wine, so that means this wine is likable. And so... that's a good starting point for me. If someone else liked it, and to your point, Rick, and then I don't like it, I hope you don't go back to that person at your wine store and say, can you recommend something else? Because clearly your palates aren't
right.
Connecting.
Exactly. Right. No, totally. Absolutely. Right.
I think that's the big takeaway from this is you just need to find the person, points or medals or whatever, are great if you find a person whose palate is somewhat aligned to your palate. And then, as Jeff said, it's a jumping point from there. It's, all right, well, I might like this wine. I might go in this direction because we have a similar palate.
And like in so many other things, you know, in the wine business as well, you got to kiss a lot of frogs until you find your prince or princess.
Right.
Right.
So I would also say that so many wines today, compared to even 20 years ago, are technically good. Right? You're not going to say, I mean, it's not, you might not like it. It might not go to your personal palate, but it's technically okay.
I didn't drink 20 years ago, so I don't know what the wine was.
But there's wines that...
Oh, wow, you put a little shade on my age there.
I was going to say...
There's wines that I review, and, you know, it's not liking to my palate, but it's liking to somebody else's. And it could be because, you know, it might be a sweeter wine, and I'm a dry person, you know? But if that person likes things more on the fruitier side or the sweeter side, they will like that.
Absolutely.
You know, who am I to judge? Because I don't, you know, I don't particularly care for stuff like that. Who am I to judge? Because the people that, you know, read what I write, they might like that.
Right.
Well, you are to judge. You're a wine critic. You're a wine writer. Yeah. You're respected. And you know, so you are to judge.
True. I guess I am. Yeah.
You are to judge, and people then who have found that they have a similar palette to you will read you and go, yes, I'm going to buy that. Or, you know, I'm willing to give this.
Or, no, I'm not going
to
buy that.
Right. I'm going to.
Or
right.
I know somebody that likes that and I'm going to tell that person.
Right.
This is something they need to try.
Right. Right. Well, we are, as I thought, this would be a very kind of heated conversation, and the hour has gone rather quickly. So I'm...
Riddle time.
Riddle time.
Oh, geez. All right.
Time to get the thinking caps on.
The answer is wink.com. Go there, check it out.
Trywink.com/wrap-up. That's what it is.
Wrap-up.
Does that mean I need to finish my bottle of wine before we close them?
And open the next one. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. What must be in your oven, yet cannot be baked, grows in the heat, yet shuns the light of day. What sinks in water, but rises in air, looks like skin, but is fine as hair.
Mold.
Yeast.
Steam.
Yeast.
Ta-da!
I'm not going to lie, I haven't been keeping track, even though I said I was going to keep track. that's two, Rick, right? Is that your second?
I believe it is.
That's two. Nick has got the first one, right? So I should start writing it down.
Yeah, I'm expecting a ribbon with 95 points
on it. Oh, okay. That's true. We'll have to
Rick,
have...
Rick could just tag up that wall behind him.
Yes. Oh, so yes, very good.
Your server's next show at 11.
And Debbie, mold, you know, that was good. That was good.
If you
yeast
have
mold
in your oven, there's a problem.
That is,
yes.
Well, yes.
I don't know. I was just like thinking about stuff. It's like, oh my God. Like,
Debbie, that invite to your house for dinner, I'm going to take a hard pass.
Yes.
Leave at the restaurant, Jeff.
All right, so let's take 1 minute each and do your shameless little plugs. We'll go the other direction. Rick, you're up first.
All right, my name's Rick Dean. I am from Strong Coffee to Red Wine. That's the name of my blog. And I just have a lot of fun talking about wines I like and occasionally wines I don't that other people like, food and a little bit of Charleston. So thank you very much for having me today.
Thank you. And Nick.
So I am a wine comm guy, C-O-M-M. It's mainly because I like to talk a lot. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and at winecommguy.com.
Jeff?
Jeff Kralik, Drunken Cyclist. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, far too many social media outlets. I hate social media, but I'll try to be cheery when you contact me there. I have a big rosé tasting coming up, a true rosé tasting, which is non-saignée, intentional rosé, in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned for the results of that.
Awesome.
And Debbie?
I'm Debbie G. Aquino, the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess, and you can find me at HudsonValleyWineGoddess.com, and I'm on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and all those social media channels, Google Plus, whatever.
Lori, excuse me, let me come back because I didn't mention any of my social media. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, I'm on all of them. Coffee to Red Wine on Twitter and Instagram. Strong Coffee to Red Wine.
And lastly, I'm Lori, I'm your host, and thank you for joining Wine Writers Wrap Up. And we do this once a month. And again, shameless plug, here we go, number 3, 4, 5, I don't know, trywink.com/wrap-up to get $22 off. And our next wrap-up is going to be on Monday, June 11th and it is going to be bias against packaging. What's your thoughts on how you package wine?
Ooh, that's a good one.
All right. So thanks, everybody, for joining. Have a great week.
Thanks, Lori.
And thanks for...
Thanks, Lori.
Have a great one. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at DracenaWines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!